And welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host and tour guide, Yada. Each weekday morning, I strive here on GCN to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and with politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you'll listen, your eyes may be opened, and you may ultimately change your mind towards many of these human institutions. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, my mission is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines, all while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then during our second hour, we will engage God on his terms by way of his one and only covenant and through his always dependable Torah teaching, so that with his guidance, you will be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with him. For those that would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything that is said over the next 2 hours, our toll-free number is 877-376-45. As we heard on the SRN news this morning, the U.S. economy unexpectedly shrank. Now, we're told that it shrank at an annualized rate of 0.1%, having slipped 1.1% in the most recent period, the fourth quarter. Now, what does that mean? Well, as Craig Smith, who is, I think, the most enlightened economist in America today, has repeatedly affirmed, there is a underlying inflation rate in America of 6%. It's a direct result of quantitative easing, which inflates the money supply, and the grotesque increase of M3, which the Fed doesn't even report because it's so out of control. America has done everything possible to devalue its currency, which is the source of inflation. And the only reason it's masked is because of the recession that the nation continues to be in, because even with a 2 or 3% annualized growth rate, you're still in a decline of 3 or 4% because of the underlying inflation. The fourth quarter period, this is the BBC now trying to explain why all the economists were surprised by the contraction of the U.S. Government. It was the largest contraction since the first quarter of 2009. Said that the quarter was dominated by fiscal cliff, spending cuts and tax rises that had been due to come into force on January 1st. And so it was the concern over these. That's not true. The markets rallied at the end of the year, as I told you they would, as people who had invested in the market took advantage of lower capital gains rates and lower personal tax rates. And they declined after the first of the year. The economy did because people had less incentive to invest because of those same tax increases. It was exceedingly easy to forecast, and yet every economist that the BBC interviewed failed to see the obvious. Anyway, it goes on to say that these fiscal cliff issues were avoided, and we would have been much better off as a nation had we gone over the fiscal cliff. On a deal between the Republican-dominated Congress and the White House was reached. It wasn't a deal between the Republican-dominated Congress and the White House. The Republican-dominated Congress capitulated to the White House, which would not negotiate. However, economists warned at the time that fears of an abrupt cut in government spending were undermining business and consumer confidence. No, it wasn't a cut in government spending, because government has to be spent cut by 50% for America to even have the slightest hope of survival. The problem was it was the actual imposition of higher taxes. This article says, yes, that's true. However, part of the deal includes tax rises for the highest earning Americans and more significantly for the economy. Hey, at least the BBC, to their credit, got that line right. The highest earning Americans. The liberal politicians, including the line Obama, call it the richest Americans. And the taxes aren't on wealth. They are on earnings, productivity. This at least had it right. Taxes for the highest earning Americans, and more significantly for the economy, the expiration of a payroll tax and holiday, payroll tax holiday, it says here, for U.S. employees. The payroll tax that had been temporarily suspended, it is the one that pays for unemployment benefits. Yeah, there's a benefit in the United States to be unemployed. This is a country that rewards failure and punishes success, that allowing it to go back into place had a extraordinarily significant effect on middle class, something which this article says is widely expected by economists to further weigh down on growth during the current quarter. This all comes as a shock to the analysts on Wall Street, who had been expecting a 1.1% growth, according to a poll by the news agency Reuters. Not one economist that Reuters surveyed, this is the BBC article, mind you, had predicted the economic contraction. Not one. Now, I'm not an economist. I predicted it. It will add pressure to the U.S. Federal Reserve and do more to stimulate the economy. Members of its Open Market Committee are due to announce the conclusions of the last policy-setting meeting later on Wednesday. Yeah, these guys, they play by a different set of rules. First of all, there is essentially no interest now on T-bills, which means there's nothing they can do from an interest rate to stimulate the economy. All they can do is pour more money into it, and when you pour more money into the economy, you devalue the currency, and if it were not for the fact that we're in a severe recession, a contraction of our economy, inflation would be out of control. The only reason it's not out of control is because the Fed and the U.S. government have made it almost impossible to borrow money. That's why housing has not recovered. So growth was dragged down by the decision of many businesses, they say here in this article, to decrease inventory. America is in a horrible fix. We may have a modest recovery over the next few years, but the course of the next 10 years will lead to what will be anarchy in America. Within a period of 10 to 15 years, America will cease to exist as a viable economy. Our economy will collapse. We will reach the point where we cannot service our debt. We will drown under an ocean of debt that we created, immorally trying to indulge ourselves while passing off the bill to our children. While immorally, we tried to rob those who were productive to reward those who are not. And it has led to our destruction. It's only a matter of time. This story is also from Washington. It reads that a cache of weapons seized off the a ship off the coast of Yemen had markings that indicate they came from Iran, a U.S. official said on Tuesday. The markings on those weapons, which included surface-to-air missiles, potent explosives, and rocket-propelled grenades, indicate they came from the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps facilities. Now, we've been talking about this for a long time. When the United States invaded Iraq, it did one of the dumbest things any nation has ever possibly done. We sacrificed a million Iraqi lives and almost 10,000 American lives to make a bad situation much worse. But not only did we make a bad situation worse in Iraq, we gave Iraq to Iran. And when we did that, we changed the balance of power in the Middle East. Iran, now that it controls Iraq, now that it controls Syria, now that it controls Lebanon, now that it is the weapons supplier of Hamas, now that it is able to supply weapons to Shias around the Islamic world, has undermined the balance of power. And the Syrian war is a direct result of our invasion of Iraq, because the Sauds, the Sunni leaders, wish to reverse that trend, and they started a proxy war. They turned a peaceful protest into a civil war that has left nearly 100,000 people dead and almost 600,000 or 700,000 refugees, just because of the upending of the power structure that existed in the Islamic world that resulted from America's invasion of Iraq. Well, this is evidence of it. The weapons, which came from Iran, were destined for the Shiite Muslims in Yemen. The Houthis is a Shiite rebel movement in northern Yemen that have been engaged in two all-out wars with the government of Yemen, which is repulsive. It's a dictatorship, as is the government of Saudi Arabia. And the last time around, when Saudi Arabia blamed Iran for supplying weapons, the Saudi Arabians thought it would be within their purview to lob American rockets against the Houthis, which they did. We have created a civil war now that is raging not only in Syria, but across all of the Islamic countries with a Shia majority or minority. There's only two that I'm aware of that have a Shia majority. That would be Iran and Iraq, which are now one country. But there are many that have a Shia minority, for example, like Saudi Arabia. Syria has a Shia minority. As we know, the President of the United States went to Cairo to give a speech to encourage fundamentalist Muslims, calling their religion great, telling them that they had made wonderful contributions to the world and that they were fighting a just cause on behalf or against unjust people on his great apology tour, where he apologized for all things that that the United States had stood for while promoting all things that Islam had stood for, and Islam's long history is a river of blood. Muhammad was the most repulsive man who ever lived. Everything Islam has ever touched, it has destroyed. But nonetheless, this president encouraged the Islamic Reformation that we have seen so corrupt northern Africa and now much of the Middle East. Egypt, over this past week, has exploded in turmoil, with at least 30 people dying in clashes. And these clashes have been responded to now by the military, who has said that they had to respond to restore order. How are we any different in Egypt now than we were before the Muslim Brotherhood came to power, other than killing and rape and rage are more pronounced? To Shattering Mist, we're talking about the mess that was wrought in Egypt with the imposition of the Muslim Brotherhood and their new constitution based on Sharia law. Armored vehicles and military police fanned through the streets of Egypt to quell the protests. Egypt's army chief said political unrest was pushing the state to the brink of collapse. It's a stark warning from the institution that ran the country until last year, as Cairo's first freely elected leader now struggles to curb the bloody street violence, is the story as it's presented in the news media. The fact of the matter is that that Mohamed Morsi simply gained control over the military by removing from office those who he could not control, and promising them that if they go quietly, he would not imprison them, and then bribing those who were under them with higher rank so long as they would kowtow to him. And so now the army is under the control of a fundamentalist Muslim. It's very much like the deal that was made in Turkey, except in Turkey, Erdogan through over 350 high-ranking generals into prison. The generals who were secularists, he threw into prison, and there's probably no prisons in the world worse than those in Turkey, unless you're speaking of those in Egypt. Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, a U.S.-trained general appointed by President Mohamed Morsi, who is also trained in the United States. He got his graduate degrees from the University of Spoiled Children, USC, last year. He now heads the armed forces. He added in a statement that one of the primary goals of deploying troops in the cities was to protect the Suez Canal. Sisi's comments were published on an official Army Facebook page. They followed 52 deaths in the past week as a result of disorder and mounting sense of crisis that is facing Egypt. Egypt, by the way, is now also bankrupt. If it hadn't been for the United States continuing to release funds to Egypt. In fact, John McCain recently met with Morsi. He was evidently sent by the Senate to decide whether or not the United States continues to pay Egypt, principally its military, over $1 billion a year. That money John McCain released because he was so impressed with Mohamed Morsi. And the day after he leaves, Mohamed Morsi, in a speech, praised the Sheikh al-Rahman, the man who inspired the first bombing of the World Trade Center, the man who was responsible for the murder of Anwar Sadat. That's how easy it was to fool John McCain. We supplied the money. The international community is propping up Egypt. Otherwise, it would have completely collapsed under the guidance of the Muslim Brotherhood. You see, in Islam, there is no hope for economic prosperity. If it wasn't for OPEC, the entire Islamic world would be rolling in rubble. And that is because for economic progress to be made, you have to encourage inventiveness. You can't encourage inventiveness if you do not educate people, if you do not give people freedom. But in the Islamic world, there's only submission. Economic progress is made when people believe that when they trust their government and they trust others to act fairly so that if they do invest and they do succeed, they will get the benefits of their success as opposed to being killed for it. And, of course, lying and stealing are authorized in the Quran. And so there is no hope of actually building a successful economy in an Islamic country. What little economy existed in Egypt, which was based almost exclusively on tourism, and tourists seeing things that Muslims had yet to destroy, but certainly had not built, that now has cratered. If you think, however, that the unrest, the anarchy that we're witnessing now in Egypt, with its cities being turned to rubble, with angry people throwing tear gas canisters that are being hurled at them back at the army, with the army rolling tanks through the streets and shooting at the people, if you think that that is unique to the world of Islam, because it is happening now in Iraq, that's a story we'll go to next, it is happening in Syria, it is certainly happening in Egypt. The same thing, however, happened in the socialist country of Greece. It happened recently in Spain. It's going to happen in France and Italy. And, my friends, it's going to happen in the United States. What you're witnessing there is the same kind of anarchy that's going to break out in the United States when our economy collapses under the weight of its debt. And the same response is going to occur. The U.S. is going to deploy its military to put down the revolt, just as Morsi, who was the benefactor of a revolt in Egypt, is now putting down a new revolt with the military that he now controls. It is our future, too. Shattering myths. One of the great myths about Islam is that when people think of religion, they think of virtue. And with Islam, the virtues of Islam are the antithesis of anything that we would consider to be good. As it relates to the 10 statements that Yah wrote in stone with his own finger, Muhammad violated every single one of them and encouraged his followers to do the same. So the moral code that is the residue of Yah's instructions that does influence Western countries is the antithesis of what exists in the Islamic world. So CNN is reporting the sexual violence against female protesters in Cairo's Tahrir Square is reaching epidemic proportions. And I shared with you the other day that the vast preponderance of the refugees in Syria said that the women were being raped, and they were being raped in front of their husbands and in front of their children, and that they were being raped both by the rebels and by the government forces, and that rape was so common that it was listed as the primary reason that the refugees were fleeing Syria. It wasn't threats of death or destruction or lack of food or water. It was the constant presence of rape. Kind of reminds me in the Blazing Saddles movie, somebody was interviewing one of the bad guys, and the bad guy, he asked the bad guy, well, you know, this lifestyle that you've chosen, what do you do? I engage in rape, arson, robbery, rape. And the guy said, we interrupted, well, you already mentioned rape. Yeah, but I really like rape. Well, that is the mindset of good Muslims. Rape is prominent. Now, rape is considered fine in Islam. Muhammad himself was a rapist. Muhammad is shown raping three women in the Hadith. Each time that his men conquered a Jewish community, Muhammad got first dibs of the women captives. He always picked the prettiest one. In the most vivid detail, his goons murdered a woman's husband. They murdered the woman's father, and then Muhammad took her and raped her. It is common in Islam, and it is approved in Islam. The Quran approves sex with slaves, which is the very definition of rape. You know, rape, arson, robbery, looting, shooting, enraged rioting, and shouting Allahu Akbar, and lest we forget, of course, prayer, are all part of an Islamist day. So here CNN is reporting that sexual violence against female protesters in Cairo has escalated to epidemic proportions. The Operation Anti-Sexual Harassment intervened in a number of cases when people gathered in Tahrir Square on the anniversary to protest the anniversary of the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood to power. These attacks represented a startling escalation in violence against women. Well, why would there be such an escalation of violence against women if an overtly religious group came to power? If they imposed religious law, don't you think that women would be protected? Well, not in Islam, because in Islam, women are considered rubbish. That is true. Women are considered so vile that their only existence is to please men. And because of Muhammad's attitude towards women, and therefore the Quran's and Hadith's attitude towards women, it is considered appropriate for Muslims to rape women, to abuse them, to hit them, to starve them, to do anything that they wish to manipulate them. There's an article that one day we will probably dedicate a show or two to that was written by a man that called it Muhammad's most effective invention. He invented the notion of the harsh treatment of women in Islam that not only ingratiated violent-minded, carnal-natured men to his cause, because now they could have as many women as they want. They could treat them as savagely as they wanted, that those women now only existed to please them. And, of course, we then witnessed the Stockholm Syndrome, where those women were constantly abused, but with the interruptions of abuse, the occasional interruptions, they then began to back to support those who were victimizing them. Well, the article says that as the organization tried to intervene and to protect women who were being raped by the backers of the Muslim Brotherhood, that the attackers used knives and other weapons. It said that that as they tried to protect the women, that those knives and weapons were wielded on them. This is a quote. It says, "This phenomenon requires urgent attention and treatment, and it is linked to the broader social problem of endemic and daily sexual harassment and assault of women," the Operation Anti-Sexual Assault said. Well, the reason that there is a radical increase in rape and other demeaning treatment of women in Egypt is directly proportional to the increase of influence of fundamentalist Islam in Egypt. They go hand in hand. Last night, I was listening to one of the few television shows that I actually watch. It was NCIS Los Angeles. And ended up screaming at the television. One of the characters in the show was talking to a wannabe jihadist, allegedly from Chechnya, and quoted a Quran 532. It's what George Bush quoted once to make it sound like the Quran encourages Muslims to be peaceful. She didn't quote the entire thing, didn't quote it accurately, but let me read it to you so that you get a sense of it. It says, "Because of what we ordained for the children of Israel," this would be for Jews, "that if anyone killed a person not in retaliation of murder and or to spread mischief in the land." Now, you can kill anyone according to this for spreading mischief in the land. Mischief in the land is anything that opposes the universal subjugation of all people to Islam and to Allah. So, "We ordained for the children of Israel that if anyone killed a person not in retaliation for murder and or to spread mischief in the land, it would be as if he killed all mankind." So that's what she read. Now, the reality is that that line is is plagiarized out of the Jewish Talmud, a document that was written centuries earlier. It is used in the Talmud in the context of Cain and Abel. It makes perfect sense in the context of Cain and Abel. It makes no sense whatsoever where it is just thrown into this story. In fact, the preceding verse says, "Then Allah sent a raven who scratched the ground to show him how to hide the shame of his brother. Woe is me, he said. Was I even able to hide from this raven, to hide the shame of my brother?" And then he became full of regrets. That's too. The story of the raven scratching the ground also comes from the Talmud. Plagiarized, twisted to serve Muhammad's agenda. But this is the reason why I screamed at the television. Anyone who did just read the next verse would know that you can't justify this claim that the Quran encourages people not to kill when the next verse reads, "The punishment of those who wage war against Allah and his messenger," which, by the way, we're doing right here, "and do mischief in the land," which we're also doing here according to the Islamic standard, "is only that they should be killed or crucified or have their hands and feet cut off on opposite sides or be expelled from the land. That is their disgrace in this world, and a great torment is theirs in the hereafter." That's the next line. So here's a television show giving millions of viewers this impression that the Quran discourages murder. And the very next line says that if anybody does anything that can be considered opposed to Islam, that the only punishment, the only consequence for them is for them to be killed, for them to be crucified, for them to have hands and feet cut off on opposite sides. Which, by the way, is what we're witnessing every time we go into an Islamic control area and try to free the people from the stench of this disastrous religion. Speaking of the stench of this disastrous religion, let's turn to Syria. Dozens of people, scores of people, were found slain execution style in a bloody river, tossed into a bloody river in Syria. Yes, the young boys, most case young men, had their hands tied behind their back, and then they were murdered, execution style, and then thrown into a river. The corpses of what were at least 81 men, that's scores, not dozens, were all executed. Residents found them in the river in a town near the city of Aleppo. An opposition video, the authenticity, which of course could not be verified because you cannot, no reporter can be embedded with the Islamic jihadists, the rebels that America is supporting because they would kill them. They would kidnap them for ransom if they didn't kill them. But they were all sprawled on a muddy bank with their head wounds. Their hands were tied behind their backs. Their bodies all showed signs of having been tortured. This is what Islam brings upon a people. This is how it corrupts them. Abu Faris, an opposition spokesman in the Aleppo countryside, said the names of the victims were confirmed by their families and their relatives were arrested and detained by the Air Force Intelligence in Aleppo. The agency is regarded as one of the government's most important and notorious units. It was the latest report of mass deaths in the Syrian civil war, an all-out battle between President Bashar Assad and government forces as well as insurgents. Now, here's the truth. No one knows. Well, I'm sure somebody knows, but we don't know who perpetrated this. The opposition says the regime adds another massacre to its record while the entire Arab world and the international community keep watching the Syrian misery in silence and complete hypocrisy. The reason the world continues to watch is because no one knows who committed the atrocity. And there's nothing that could be done, even if we did know. It is just as likely that the one jihadist group attacked and killed another jihadist group. It's just as likely that that Assad's militants did it as the militants that America is aiding and abetting. They're both ruthless. They're both disgusting. You brought this on yourself because of this miserable, disgusting, uncivilized, violent, and perverse religion. And there's nothing that can be done to help you until you denounce your religion. And yet the opposite of that is what's occurring. We're seeing a wave of reformation of Islam. Good morning and welcome back to the final segment of the news hour of Shattering Myths. We were still in the world of Islam. I told you that we would turn to what happened in Iraq. Iraqi soldiers have opened fire on protesters in the city of Fallujah, killing at least five and wounding 60 by shooting at them. The clashes erupted after the soldiers prevented people from joining an anti-government demonstration in the mostly Sunni city after Friday prayers. Boy, this tells you a great deal. For those who are in the know, Fallujah was the city where Muqtada al-Sadr, who is the probably the most influential person today in Iraq. He is a Iranian mullah. He controls the largest Islamic terrorist group, the largest Islamic militant group in Iraq. He ordered the capture and then torture and then desecration of American soldiers in Fallujah, dragging them through the streets with women striking them with sticks and spitting at them and then burning their bodies after mutilating them and then hanging them upside down from a bridge in the middle of Fallujah. America, however, negotiated with Muqtada al-Sadr and empowered him so that that once we gave the country to the Shiite religious leaders, he became the country's de facto leader. Muslims in that country, Shia Muslims, vote as he tells them to. He is the kingmaker. Well, in this city, now that that the Shias control all of Iraq, and now that they have been empowered with American weapons, they are wielding those weapons against the Sunni who are protesting against them. All we did in Iraq was replace a Sunni secular government with a Shia religious government, and the Sunni secular government, of course, was opposed to Iran, kept Iran at bay. But the Shia religious government is controlled by Iran, is completely beholden to Iran, which enabled Iran to spill out its influence across the region. Well, so here are the Sunnis now in the mess that America made, protesting that they have no rights and they have none. And what do the Shias do? They send in the military. They don't have to send in their militia anymore because America has equipped them and armed them with some of the best possible weapons. This, of course, is the latest confrontation with the army since huge protests against the Shia-led government began 5 weeks ago in Baghdad in western Iraq. The protesters accused the government of discrimination against Sunni Arabs. That's the reality of it. It's not presumed. Sunni Arabs have absolutely no say whatsoever in Iraq. Iraq is controlled entirely by mullahs in Tehran, and they are Shia. They say that they are second-class citizens in the country. They are kafirs now. They are called, and they've called for the resignation of the Shia Prime Minister, Nouri Maliki, a Shia. Sheikh Ahmad Abu Risha, who is credited with rallying Sunni tribal leaders to turn on al-Qaeda. No, what Sheikh Ahmad Abu Risha did is he conned American generals to say, if you provide money and weapons to Sunnis under my control, then we will turn on al-Qaeda. And, of course, they didn't. What they did is they used those weapons to instigate what was a horrible civil war that America started in Iraq back in 2003, I think, 2004, somewhere in that period of time. And that civil war still lingers with these same weapons. And, of course, the weapons that America supplied to the Sunnis have now all made their way into Syria, which is why the protesters in Iraq, even armed to the teeth with American weapons, the Sunnis, couldn't protect themselves against the Shia military because they were fighting the Shia-controlled government in Syria with those very same weapons. This is his statement. He says, we demand that the government hand over those who were involved in the shootings so that we can kill them. We warn al-Maliki that the people of Anbar have another choice if our demand is not met, which would be civil war again. Abu Rishu told supporters in a television statement broadcast by a number of Iraqi news outlets that the weight of his 160,000-member clan and militia will be turned against the Shiites who control the government, and that Fallujah will become a bloodbath. That is what we created in Iraq. Nicely done, America.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of